So I saw this story from her book years ago. It's a tremendous story from her book that really hits home. It was in a Mishpacha magazine, one of his Yahrzeits going all the way back. And what happened was like this. Rav Huttner was together with the Alter of Slupalskos, Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel, the original Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel. And there was a bunch of people that were there that were tremendously choshev. We have Rav Avram Grzesinski, who is the, I think the brother of Rav Reuven, is that true? I think it's the brother of Rav Reuven Grzesinski. Okay, we have the Mashkiach of Slobodka, we have the Alter's sons that were there, Rav Avram Kaplan of Berlin. So all those people were sitting there together and they were talking. And the Alter asked Rav Avram Kaplan to tell him over a certain midah, a pleasing midah that he had witnessed in Berlin. Something that he had gotten in Berlin that he could take from the people and bring into Slobodka. Tell me something that they do. So Rav Kaplan thought for a little moment and said, the German language is very refined. And it bespeaks humility as well as subjugation to the person that you're speaking to. Meaning, if you're asked a question, you don't assert an answer and tell them, this is the answer. The way you talk in German is, let's say, where is this bakery? So the person would answer and say, it's around the corner. Nicht wahr? Nicht wahr means, isn't that so? Isn't that right? So everything you would say as if, I just want to make sure, do you think that that's correct along with me? We don't really have that in the English language. When you answer a question, you don't say, I know there are people that do this, but you don't say, well, where's the safer? The safer's over there, isn't that right? We don't do that. There are people that do, but in German, that's the normal way of doing it. It indicates that the answerer is unsure and needs help from the person giving the question. It doesn't assert himself more than anybody else. So immediately when Rav Kaplan gave that answer, an argument broke out with everybody there. So Rav Grzesinski called in Lo Sechanein. You're not allowed to praise a non-Jew or even the midos of a non-Jew. It's usur. Lo Sechanein, you can't find favor in what they're doing. He held it was usher to be able to say anything like that, even though it was considered something good, something you can learn from. He held it was lo sechanein. The Alter agreed. The Alter Slobodka agreed. Maybe it's not the right thing to do. Maybe he was referring to getting a midah from the Jews of Germany as opposed to the non-Jews of Germany. One bucher got up and defended Rebbe Kaplan in front of the Alter Slobodka, the Mashkiach, and all the people there. He got up and he said, you can definitely learn a good midah from the non-Jews. How can you not learn from those character traits? This is a good midah. You can get out from them. You can take it for yourself and say, okay, this is one thing that we take from them. Why can't you do such a thing? That's what the Bucher said. Years passed. Rav Huttner ended up coming to America. Obviously started his yeshiva in Berlin. He was preparing a shir in his office. And as he was preparing the shir, he knew he was coming there, a man knocked on the door. So Rav Huttner answered the door. He was wearing a large coat, a large trench coat. And it was a very hot day, which is strange, wearing a coat on such a hot day. So the Rav tried pushing him off until after the shir. He told him, listen, if you can, just ask me after the shir. I'm in the midst of preparing in my head. I can't think right now. I have to go over this shir. But he persisted. He said, I have to speak to you right now. He said, do you recognize me at all? He said to Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner said, no, I don't remember you at all. He said, I'm the buffer from that meeting. I'm the one that defended Rav Kaplan when we were fighting about good midos and learning from German. He was there. The man then took off his coat and he showed that he had a prosthetic arm. One arm was normal, the other arm was a prosthetic arm. And said, the way this happened is I was part of Dr. Mengele's, the evil Dr. Mengele, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, of his experiments. Dr. Mengele was well known for crazy experiments that he did on Jews. He did everything. He wanted to know how pain worked. He wanted to know how twins were born. He wanted to know what would happen if animals would be together with human beings. What would happen? But he was sick, some of the things that he did. And as he was amputating this man's arm without anything, no medicine, no, obviously, anesthesia, nothing there. So he's amputating the man's arm and tearing it off. He kept saying, it hurts, Nichtwar. This hurts you very badly, Nichtwar. Kept saying those words. You're Jewish, Nichtwar. Those were the words that Dr. Mengele is taking off the arm. And he realized that this was the issue. that it's not about one good aspect that you can find in them. There are so many things that you can abuse even within a system that's made for something good. Rav Huttner was the last one that was alive that was at that meeting. The altar was gone, his sons were gone, the mashgiach was gone, Rav Kaplan was gone. The only person left was him and Rav Huttner. So he wanted to ask mechila from Rav Huttner for his impudence of arguing with the Rav, with Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel, the altar of Slobodka, and all the other people there, and extending his das. That's what he said. It's a crazy story. It's an unbelievable story. How could Mengele treat human beings like that? How is it shy for a human being to treat other human beings like that? What's the shot? How did that happen? How do you have no respect at all? And if you tell me, well, he wasn't a human being, I will show you proof after proof after proof that Dr. Mengele was a normal human being in all regards, but he was sick when it came to Jews. Didn't experiment on anyone else that we know about. I shouldn't say that for sure. Except on Jews. So how does that happen? How does a person do these types of, this sickness, just on Jews or anything else? The same can really apply to any KKK member or anybody else who really would go about killing people, human beings, because they hate them so much after they did nothing to them. How could it be? How does a person do that? So there's only one way to do it. It's if you consider the person subhuman. If you don't consider the person a human being, then you don't treat him like a human being. You treat him like an animal. And the same way that, I'm not positive, but the same way that you probably made ants suffer when you were a little kid, or poured salt on slugs to see what would happen, or took little, those little lenses, magnifying lenses, and tried seeing if you could burn the little, little guys around, right? Just like they did that, they looked at them as if they were just another animal. See, if you believe in the Charles Darwin and the theory of evolution, then all you are is a monkey with a better brain. That's all you are. Every time they find another set of bones of some crazy ape that somehow has some human characteristics, they look at it and they say, oh, we got another Lucy. We have another subhuman being that lived 20 million years ago. Amazing. Amazing. And the more they do that, the more they're animalizing human beings. Or humanizing animals. Depending on how you want to look at it. See, you're just another Darwin chimp. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky understood this, and I know this is a famous story. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was on a plane next to one of the ministers in Israel. He doesn't say which one, it's in his paper on Emes Yaakov, but he's sitting next to one of the ministers in Israel. He was sitting in first class, his grandson and granddaughter were sitting in the regular, peon class, which we all sit in. Right? Rav Yaakov was sitting all the way up there, and as the flight was going on, they kept coming in. Zadie, can I get you something? Rebbe, can I get you something? They were asking, what can I do? What can I make it better? Can I help you with anything? Can I do anything? And they kept asking. The minister turned to Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky and said, I don't understand. I give my grandkids gifts all the time, but they don't treat me with any respect whatsoever. They grab the gift and they go. So you, they're treated with such respect. What's the difference between me and you? Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky answered him. It's so simple. So passionate. But you need a mind like Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky to give this answer. You can't come up with this answer on your own. Rav Yaakov has to come up with it. It's because you teach your kids that you are just a monkey that evolved. You're an animal that became a little bit better. So the older you are, the previous generation is closer to the age of monkeys. So you're just closer to the apes. He is a better human being. I teach my kids, you read it to Doros. The closer you are to Har Sinai, the closer you are to Adoration, the greater person you are. So therefore me, I'm a greater person than my grandchildren are. So my grandchildren look up to me because I'm closer to Adam, closer to Matan Torah. Your grandchildren look down at you because you're just a monkey. Just another monkey. A little bit better. What makes us different? It's something called the Tzelem Elokim. an image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made us not only be born with, but allowed us to do everything we need to do in this world with. Tzelem Elokim does not mean, says the Nefesh HaChayim, that you just look like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's not what it means. Because there are owls that have human-like faces. There are monkeys that have human-like faces. There are animals out there that have that human countenance. So it cannot be that. It can't be that. The Tzelem Elokim is something deeper. Deep within the recesses of you, of your neshama, is your midos, your abilities, your decision making, and everything you do. That's the real Tzelem Elokim. And it projects itself from your face. It projects itself from you. If you have the proper midos, you do proper deeds, you do it in the right way, you project yourself as a Tzelem Elokim. People see you as a human being. And if you don't, the people see you as just another animal. You're just another animal. An animal is hungry, you're hungry. An animal sleeps, you sleep. An animal needs to take a walk outside and take a break, you need to walk outside and take a break. These are animals. They're just an animal. Dr. Mendel looked at him and he saw that. Rav Volbi quotes Rav Sholmi Amsterdam. That everybody says, it's a famous line, had Darwin ever seen Rav Yisrael Salanter? Rav Yisrael Salanter, king of the Muster movement. Had Darwin ever seen him, he never would have said that we stem from the same company as apes. There's no way. Rav Yisrael Salanter was a Tzelem Elokim. He was a human being. But who did Darwin hang out with? Darwin hung out with monkeys. So because he hung out with monkeys, he said, human beings must be like monkeys. That's what we are. Because he's looking at it from another aspect, from another regard. Rabbi Yonah, in Avos, Gimel Yudalit, Chaviv Adam Shenibra B'Tzelem. Beloved is a person of HaKadosh Baruch Hu since he was born with the Tzelem Elokim. Chiva Yisera, an extra bit of love, no dasful, is given over to such a person, Shenibra B'Tzelem, because he was created with that Tzelem Elokim. Says the Rabbi Yonah, we were created with Salmo B'Dmuso. We have a connection that no other animal has, that nothing else has in the world. We were made like God. We were made to emulate what God stands for. And that's what every human being has to strive for. To make it look like you are God in a human form. That's what you need to make it look like. And anytime we don't have that, when we're not there, then we haven't reached our full potential yet. We want people to think when they see us, I'm scared, I think I'm looking at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what we need people to see. Ben Ish Chai, when he went on his first trip to Eretz Yisrael, Ben Ish Chai was named during that first trip to Eretz Yisrael. His name was Rabbi Yosef Chaim Mibagdad. But when he went to Eretz Yisrael, he stopped by, outside of Tzfat, a kever of Benio Ben Yoyada. Benio Ben Yoyada, the right-hand man of Shlomo Melech and David Melech as well. And when he stopped by that kever, he felt the connection. He felt that he was a spark of the Neshama of Benio Ben Yoyada. And from that time on, he named all of his spark after Benio. There's the Benio, there's the Ben Yoyada, there's the Rav Elim, there's the Makab Zoel. All of the names that he gives to his farm are based on that one trip that he took to Eretz Yisrael when he visited that area. So this is what happened. They were on their way to Eretz Yisrael. They were traveling by caravan. Something either held them up or whatever it was. They came to a dangerous area, a very dangerous area, in which they had to make a decision. It was coming up to Shabbos. If they stay in this area, there are well-known Bedouin Arabs or robbers, whatever it was, that can waylay them and possibly kill them. If they go on, they're going to be traveling on Shabbos. So the Ben Ish Chai said, I'm not going. Not going. Not going to walk on Shabbos. So they made camp. They made camp right in that area. And not only did they make camp, they lit candles for Shabbos. They sang for Shabbos. And all the people were standing there with their eyes peeled, looking around to see if anybody was coming, worried that somebody was going to come by. The Ben Ish Chai couldn't care less. Ben Ish Chai sang louder and louder and louder. The Ben Ish Chai was a composer. For those who are Sephardim, there are songs that are made by the Ben Ish Chai that you still sing on Friday night in Malava Malka. The Ben Ish Chai had his own songs that he went through. But then he started singing louder and louder and louder as time went on. And then, after everybody else went to sleep, the Ben Ish Chai kept his lights on. They said, let's turn it off. The robbers won't see us. We'll keep us ourselves in the dark. Ben Ish Chai said, keep it on. I want to learn. I want to learn. So he kept the light on, and he started learning. So the Arabs saw the lights, and they came up to the tent where the Ben Ish Chai was. One robber went into the tent, and then ran right out. Ran right out. Got on his horse, fled. That's what happened. Another guy did the exact same thing. Another guy walked into the tent, sword drawn. As he walks inside, he runs out. Runs out immediately. Jumps on his horse, gets out. Both of them. There were a bunch of Arabs there, and when they saw the first two guys, the strongest guys in the group, run in and run out, said there must be somebody really scary inside there. They got on their horses, they all left. One Arab who was watching over the caravan, one Arab saw this whole thing happen. He had stayed up all night, he knew he couldn't fight off all these Arab Bedouins. So he stayed, he watched the entire thing, and the next morning he told the Ben Ish Chai, this is what happened. And he said to the Ben Ish Chai, I saw with my own eyes what happened. The Ben Ish Chai told him, he walked into the room, took a look at my face, and ran out. That's a Tzalem Elokim. That's what we're striving for. We're striving to be the Grub. That when the Grub put on his tefillin and walked outside to look at the innkeeper who was beating up a Jew, the innkeeper turned to him and killed him. Just the other way. The Grub killed the innkeeper. Otherwise, it would be a very sad story. The Grub turned to the innkeeper and killed the innkeeper. The guy's beating up a Jew. Takes one look at the Grub. This is God. This is what HaKadosh Baruch would look like to me. This face, this action, the way he is, everything about him. I'm scared to death of somebody like that. Meanwhile, I put on my tefillin and people laugh. What's going on? So we're striving. We're trying to get ourselves past this point. It's beyond the point where we go on a flight and we look like every other person on the plane. We try to mix in with them. So that maybe nobody will notice that I'm Jewish. Maybe everybody will think that I'm the exact same way. No! Show your Jewishness! Show off who you are! Show them what kind of mitos you have! Show them that when somebody needs help putting a bag up, you're going to help them. Show them that when you see somebody in the airport who dropped something, you pick it up immediately and call out loud, you dropped something, do you need this? You do something that causes people to look at you and say, that is a Jew, aside from wearing the kippah or tzitzis out or whatever else that is you have. You have a big long beard, although I know that's in style and in vogue now. That doesn't necessarily tell you that it's a Jew. But a big long beard together with a kippah kind of is a dead giveaway that you're a Jew. You want to get pious? Get pious. Get pious. Get those edim down over here. Number one, I'll be able to pull you out of Gehenna much easier that way. Number two, that's what Nachman did. You know that, right? Nothing said. Okay, regardless. But either way, you get pissed. You get yourself different. You make yourself just a little bit different. Change yourself. Change yourself so that you look Jewish. So that you act like you're a Kaddish Bar who's selling. That's the point of what it is. I am not downplaying this man especially, but anybody that was in the Holocaust. Dr. Mengele was such a monkey on his own, he couldn't recognize the Tzalem Elokim in another human being. He couldn't even realize if there was a Tzalem Elokim there. He had thrown himself so down into the dirt, he had made himself a worm into the most disgusting little creature, that when Mengele saw a Jew, he couldn't see anything but a worm like himself. Like Darwin could not see anything but a monkey like himself. That's all he could see. But we know we're not. And we have to project that. I saw a guy from Yeshiva within the last month that was getting on a plane. I saw what he was wearing to get on a plane. And he looked way too cool. Way too cool. Rocking the little t-shirt with the jeans, with the Skechers that were just perfect, with just a little scuffed, but not totally scuffed. Like he totally bought those for like $50. I saw that. And I understand it. You want to look like you fit. You want to look cool. I get that. I totally understand that. I also want to look cool, and it's really easy for me. It's just, I don't even attempt it anymore. It just happens. I totally get it. But I don't want you walking into a store having people think like, oh, that guy's a businessman. He has a tie and he has a suit. I want people to look at you and say, that guy's a rabbi. And then wonder, I wonder if all rabbis act like this guy does. That's the way that it should be. See, that's the pshat of what a Tzelem Elokim can be. When a person starts realizing their own greatness, which is inherent in every person, when a person starts taking out their own kokos, their own strengths that they have, that other people don't have, and they work to perfect them, and to make it even higher, and to make it even greater, to make yourself look like the Jew that you're supposed to be, then you're accomplishing the Maimar Chazal. The Maimar Chazal, that means Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem. That you're loved. You love yourself because you're Nivra B'Tzelem. It's appreciating who you are and what you are and what you can do. That's the real deal. I'm going to end with one story. That same Rav Avram Grzhensky, the Rav Avram Grzhensky that I mentioned before that was in the story with Mendel. That Rav Avram Grzhensky, well, he wasn't with him. He was one of the guys there. Rav Avram Grzhensky was in the ghetto. And he was very, very sick. And as he was sick, he was clearly dying. The Talmidim were visiting him. They're asking how he was doing and what's going on. As they visited him once, they saw him crying. And he couldn't stop. Uncontrollable cries. And I said to him, Rebbe, what's going on? Can we help you? Are you hurt? He said, no. I mean, not more than I am. He said, are you crying because of the war? He said, no. You're crying because all these Jews are being killed. He said, no. What was he crying about? He said, these Germans had a Tzelem Elokim, and they're losing it. It's gone. They're no longer the Tzelem Elokim HaSa'asadam. They've lost it. They've turned themselves into animals. That's the saddest thing that a human being could possibly do. To lose your image, your connection to a Kadosh Baruch. There's nothing sadder than that. Said Rav Grzhensky, that's why I'm crying. I can't get over that. I can't get over to watch a person slowly but surely turn into an animal, to devolve into something worse than what he was. That's the worst media that a person could possibly have, the worst thing to see. This is our key. Our key is to look at ourselves and to say to ourselves, how can we make ourselves, project ourselves different in the eyes of other people? To make ourselves look like we truly have that Tzelem Elokim, which we all have within us. How can we project that better? That's the key to be able to become a great person. The key to becoming, well, just a great person, to showing other people what it means to believe in God.